podcast is brought to you by the good people over at Gamefly. With over 9,000 titles for the PS4, PS3, Xbox One, Xbox 360, Nintendo Switch, Wii, and other consoles, there's no better time for gamers to make the most of their systems by using Gamefly to play all the new and classic games for as little as 32 cents a day. To start your 30-day free trial, head on over to cinemageekly.com/Gamefly or click the Support Us link in the show notes for this episode.
You're listening to a podcast from the Cinema Geekly Podcast Network. We're the geeks you deserve and the ones you need right now.
It's a brand new episode of I'm a Doctor, not a podcast, Cinema Geekly's Star Trek podcast. It is the Chief Petty Officer Anthony Lewis, joined by the Fleet Admiral Ben Knight. Ben, we have two episodes of Trek to talk this week.
Romulan ale.
Yeah?
Romulan ale for those essential moments in life. We'll get a sponsor eventually. Even if it's in 2352.
I think my synthahol accidentally has actual alcohol in it. So the replicators may be on the fritz again. Please send someone to look at that. Or don't, actually.
But not in a hurry. Yeah. Scotty would be proud of you.
We got two episodes to talk about. One, I think, was exceptionally good. And one that I kind of don't even really remember that much of, Ben. Which is a bit of a departure for Discovery this season. But let's talk about the first of these two episodes, Star Trek Discovery Season 3, Episode 10, Terra Firma Part 2. So we are still in the Mirror Universe, and Giorgio hopes to lead an improved Terran Empire with Burnham by her side, and has her tortured until she eventually pledges her allegiance, because, of course, that's the only way to get things done in the Mirror Universe, Ben. You know that as well as I do.
Oh, yeah.
Giorgio reveals to Saru that the Kelpian biological change known as the Varhai does not mean that it is time for him to be culled, and is instead a natural process that will make him stronger if he lets it. Burnham and Giorgio work together to hunt Burnham's former lover, Gabriel Lorca, but this is a ruse, and Burnham soon turns on Giorgio. After a fight, Giorgio is forced to kill Burnham before dying herself in Saru's arms. She returns to Danis V, where Carl reveals himself to be the Guardian of Forever, which is a big, long callback to City on the Edge of Forever from the original series of Star Trek, for those of you who do not know.
Disappointed you had no reverb on your voice for that, but all right.
Yeah, I wish I had that going for me, but I didn't.
Fix it in post. There
we go. He explains that he can send Giorgio to another time and place where she will survive, but he had to test her first and was happy to see her attempt to change the fate of the Terran Empire. Giorgio says goodbye to Burnham before traveling through the Guardian's portal. On Discovery, Book wishes to prove his worth and uses Emerald Chain technology to help the crew connect to the Kelpian starship systems. So finally, Ben, a B-plot that really felt like a B-plot. I didn't even remember that. Everything else about this episode I remembered, though. What were your thoughts on Terra Firma Part 2?
Well, Terra Firma Part 1 I enjoyed, as we covered in the last episode.
Yes, a great deal. Me too.
I knew we were off to a good start when we had the inverted title sequence. And
oh yes, can we talk about that for just a second?
I thought
that was tremendous. The only thing that didn't quite work was that. I mean, it does work because they're doing Mirror Universe, and obviously all of the colors were inverted, which I thought was super cool. What I really wanted to say was, I loved the look.
Yeah.
Like, I liked it so much that I wish, like, some of the imagery wasn't flipped upside down. And it was just the opening for the show proper. Like, it was a good look. Weirdly enough, they inverted it, and I thought the color scheme worked really well.
Exactly the conversation my brother and I had. Yeah.
I enjoyed that. I'm glad you brought that up, because I remember upon seeing it that I'm like, oh, I want to mention that when we talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, so it was a solid start just with that. But then, I mean, so two things about this episode that were sort of, I guess, in a lot of viewers' minds when it started were, how do we get from where we are to the now very much heavily confirmed Section 31 Georgi spinoff? And there wasn't an obvious answer to that at this point. And so, you know, already sort of thinking, okay, well, we're going to get the handover there. So I kind of knew what was coming towards the end in that sense. But the mechanism to do it, I thought, was beautiful. I mean, let's be honest. Yeah, elephant in the room. It was nonsensical. The Guardian of Forever and the Carl manifestation and the explanation and all of that was nonsense, but it was beautiful nonsense.
Kind of just tossed in there. Yeah, like, why are you here? How can you... They didn't even really explain why he can manifest, but I mean, a lot of time has passed.
Yeah, and I get his explanation. You're kind of going, alright,
yeah, sure.
Could have been a cue, but whatever.
They felt like they needed to say it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it was the gateway in storytelling terms to the rest of the Georgiou arc. And from a purely production point of view, which I know is kind of how we were speaking about part one of this, this was, and in fact it's something that they're very good at with Discovery, this was it was the device that gets them from where they thought they were originally to where they need to be to commercially produce the product they're producing.
Yes.
And I mean, it was exquisitely done, because here's the thing, if you just pass Georgiou back into the Section 31 world, let's say, for example, you suddenly find out in Discovery that she's living a sort of separate secret life where she disappears off and goes and has adventures with Section 31, that would work, but then she's kind of split across the two, you don't really understand the arc of her character. This was a partial, and very careful to be partial, redemption arc for Georgiou. And it was a beautiful journey, because although, again, most viewers watching it will go, oh, this is a redemption arc, the fact that, you know, it's only to a point, and you get that Georgiou is still edgy, you get that she's a means to an end kind of gal, all of those things were so beautifully preserved in a way that I was racking my brains trying to think of a way of preserving this this kind of complicated, very multifaceted Georgiou into Section 31. And I mean, he says arrogantly, I couldn't have done it better. Obviously not, because I don't earn the big bucks for them, but I thought it was beautifully handled. But the journey was fun, and that's the important thing. That's the difference between this plot line and the Ensign Tilly number one thing. That was shoehorned in because, hey, we need to get here to do this. This was, do you know what? We all know what we're doing here. So put that aside for a minute. Just put it on the shelf. Let's have a fun trip. And watching the Mirror Universe, which is, you know, can be a bit panto, it can be a bit overdone, it can be kitsch, it can be kind of more S&M themed, which was very much the way the DS9 did it.
Absolutely.
Oh, God bless you, Kira. That was confusing. But, you know, this was it showed a development in that universe that was slightly more cerebral. It showed the development of the Kelpians in a sort of different direction and so on. I enjoyed the journey, even though I knew exactly what the destination was. And,
yep.
You know, that sounds so easy and flippant to say, but that's really hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
And to do it, I said this, I mean, this week that this and then the finale of Mandalorian, to jump franchises for a moment, came out, represents a peak for the two biggest sci-fi properties in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they both got at the same time, seemingly, was they both got their humor with the need to tell an authentic story that that makes sense. Even if you get where it's going, and I'm not the guy who says I saw that was going to be Skywalker before before you even saw the X-Wing. Spoilers, sorry. But you know, however you approach this,
yeah.
This was a moment when two great sci-fi shows at the end of a shitty year really pulled it out of the bag and just said, you know, it was almost like a sort of security blanket thing. It was, oh, we've got this, don't worry. And for, you know, we said right at the start of Discovery that we took comfort in the fact that it was being made by people who clearly love the property, even if at times they have horrible missteps. Sometimes they're driven by the network, sometimes they're driven by bad ideas or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This episode, or this double episode, I guess, was the thing that said to me, as did Mandalorian at the same time, oh, we got this.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I mean, so much was right about this. The whole aesthetic of the Mirror Universe has been sort of sympathetic to various other crossovers without being slavish to it.
Mm-hmm.
The crazy complication in terms of who was playing Nilsson and so on. All of that was weird.
Yep.
The only downside for me, and you know, it's down, I think it's on me rather than on them, was the lack of Lorca, because the whole time I watched this, we know that there's, what, 3 months that Georgiou stays in the Mirror Universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, roundabout, yeah.
And we can probably deduce from that Lorca hasn't crossed into the Prime Universe.
Mm-hmm.
We've made conclusion from that he has, rather, crossed into the Prime Universe.
Yeah.
There's a lot here that will ultimately link back into the main Discovery series. I mean, they've made no sort of secret of that. And Jason Isaacs, hello to Jason Isaacs, he's made it clear that, you know, he's coming back. He's not even being coy about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found myself itching for maybe that Skywalker moment at the end of this to go, oh, and there's Lorca.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's coming, so, you know, delayed gratification is still, you know, so much sweeter.
Yeah.
But I did find myself just slightly saddened, maybe, that we weren't there. The other thing I found really interesting was the list of races that were in the coalition against the Empire.
Yes.
So much so that, unlike me doing show prep, I wrote them down. So you've got the Romulans, you've got the Andorians, you've got the Tellarites, Klingons, Denobulans, and if you can't remember who they are, think Dr. Phlox from
Enterprise.
You've got the Rigelians and the I can't read my writing. Corridonites, who were they mentioned they appeared in Enterprise, actually, come to think of it. And they've been mentioned before, and I think we've seen them in the Discovery iteration of them in shouldn't be that long ago, Far From Home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting combination. I would like to see, and I don't see it for Discovery, but I do see it for Section 31. I don't think this is the last we're going to see of Georgiou revisiting her native timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like there was a lot of setup in that list to not explore it a little bit further.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very much here for it. It was an episode that, much like the first part of this, by the end of it, I didn't necessarily appreciate the slightly schmaltzy dialogue before the end, but everything else about this left me itching, not just to see how Discovery then moved on from it, but really to see this Section 31. And this was the, this was the, you know, this was the billboard for Section 31 mm-hmm. As a show.
Yeah.
And I literally could not be any more here for it.
For me, I sort of look at it like this was sort of, I don't know, like that moment in Avengers Endgame when they travel back in time to the first Avengers movie and there's some slapstick comedy knocking around the Tesseract, and then it ends up in Loki's hands, who died in the previous movie, but then he grabs it and disappears. I'm like, oh, that's how they're going to do the Loki TV show, even though Loki is supposed to be dead now. Because they fumbled around with time and they gave him a thing to give him an out to kind of escape. And that's sort of like what they did here for JoJo. They didn't really go on to say like where she's going, but I think we have a good idea that she's probably going back to the time from whence she came to hook up with Ash Tyler and all that other stuff. Now, maybe they'll surprise us. I don't think so. I don't know how many details are out about the Section 31 show. Like, I don't know.
Very few, and I have been digging and digging.
Like, do we know? I was going to say, do we know that Cleon Fandango is going to be on this show? Because maybe...
it's pretty likely.
Is it? Okay. I was going to say, the other...
Well, actually, here's the biggest reliable clue I can give you to Klingon Fandango's future in the show, because, okay. And it comes from a whole different universe, is the fact that they were looking at making a mini-series based on Stephen Toast, i.e. the show that gave you Clem Fandango, from which you know Ash Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't make it in the UK because the actor who plays Clem Fandango, Klingon Fandango, mm-hmm. Ash Tyler... is resident in somewhere in North America because he's committed to another project right now.
Yes.
And so they're making Toast in America, incidentally, which should be a fantastic show.
Hmm.
But they're making that, and the reason they've transplanted it over to there for that season is because of him. So I'm not ruling out that he could have found his way into another show, but the most obvious explanation is that he's heavily committed to the Section 31 show.
Yeah. Okay, so that would make sense. Because the only other time in Star Trek that I can remember that Section 31 was referenced heavily at all would be Deep Space Nine. And I wouldn't mind seeing her transplanted into that time in Star Trek either. But it makes more sense that they're just going to send her back.
But Section 31 are wibbly wobbly timey wimey, so mm-hmm. it gives such an opportunity. I mean,
to play around with that. Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, one thing I was wondering about that is that the reference, I think, as we record this week or last week, to the rumors about a multi-captain episode. Mm-hmm. Everyone is linking that to Picard,
mm-hmm.
And yes, they've recast young Picard, or they're looking to recast young Picard, and so on. Mm-hmm. But the which we don't know for what show yet. They haven't confirmed which show that's for.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is, it occurred to me that the Section 31 series might actually be where we pick up the multi-captains. The reason being that the only person who has not confirmed, you know, through the usual unofficial routes, being involved in the project is Shatner.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they could deepfake Kirk, of course.
Sure.
But if
deepfake
they're pulling
Kirk.
Yeah, if they're some would argue he's been that for a while. If they're pulling all of the different captains from all of those eras, there is only one conceivable way that that could be done, and that's either with something wibbly wobbly timey wimey, or mm-hmm. with a series of reconstructions in those different time frames that all link to a common event. Mm-hmm. That would be crazy expensive,
yes.
because they would have to effectively recreate all of the, you know, the whole
yes.
The whole scenes effectively, yep. from all of those franchises, which mm-hmm. ain't gonna happen.
No.
I'm a bold predictions moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna suggest that the multi-captain stuff is not at all the end of Picard as a series. I think it is going to be possibly the start, or possibly season finale of season one of Section 31.
Hmm.
Incidentally, if you hadn't heard this news yet, when I say multi-captain, literally Shatner is the only one who through the usual sources on the internet, is not yet linked to the project. Yes, that does mean Kate Mulgrew is at the moment linked to the project.
Yeah, I mean, and she's involved in that that animated show as well for Nickelodeon. So
she is, and Cisco, I forgot his name. Cracky, what's his name?
Oh shit!
Well, I've really forgotten his name.
Avery Brooks.
Yeah, Avery Brooks. Thank you. He, I think, actually officially has confirmed this week that he is involved in a one-off Star Trek episode in relation to one of the new franchises.
I mean, that's really crazy because he doesn't get involved in much of anything, really.
No, yeah, well, absolutely. He's like the Christopher Eccleston of the Star Trek world, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Like, he doesn't appear. Like, there was a big Deep Space Nine documentary that he was, like, not a part of at all.
Absolutely.
So but, he just doesn't.
I mean, whether it's the money or whether it's the intrigue of what they're doing, I don't know. But yeah. I'm going to call it. I'm going to say that we're not going to see Picard as the show end with that. I think we're going to see Section 31 either kick off or end its first season with a multi-captain, which is the new multi-doctor, from the way I'm saying it.
Yes. So anyway, back to the episode, because we have another episode to talk about too. That's how we get with Star Trek, folks, sometimes. Not even on this podcast, just in real life talking about it sometimes.
So it'd be.
The thing at the end, I don't know, I've liked Burnham's moment with Giorgio at the end. I know it maybe, I know you said it was maybe too schmaltzy or something for you, but I liked it. And it's, to me, it's probably carried by Sinequa Martin-Green, because she can be so earnest in her performances that I just...
She's excellent, though.
Yeah, I just buy it from her. Like, her emotion is unparalleled. She's so good at conveying that, to the point where I think
but some people are
uncomfortable by it. Oh, yes.
She was deeply compelling. And the amount of what I call eyebrow acting that occurred in that scene was extraordinary. These two women are just, you know, masters of their craft in these scenes.
No, agreed. And I agree with you when you said that they did a lot to preserve essentially the essence of the Giorgio character. They basically gave her an arc, and they expanded and changed her character without really sacrificing too much of what made her unique, which is the perfect blend. Like, that's what you're looking for. Like, you don't really want the character to come out of the other end of their arc being a completely different person. And I feel like they really hit the right balance for her. So I really enjoy that. And I love that sort of continued at the end. I loved the ending of the episode where they're gathered around in the, whatever, the mess or the rec room or whatever. Just having a toast, a salute to her. And pretty much all of it was, I mean, she is all right, but she was kind of a dick. But she was our dick. Was kind of like what it was like, you know, it was like really nice, but also kind of fun. Like, that's the one thing that I've loved with this show, is they sort of balanced this. I think it's one thing that Discovery's managed to improve upon in Star Trek. Because there would be scenes like this in Star Trek, and they're either like 100% somber, or they're 100% like reserved and like very formal. And few times, I think Deep Space Nine has managed to do this once or twice, but for the most part, it's a rare occasion where these sort of things feel human. Like, really human. And that's what this sort of was. Like, they were laughing. Some of them were teary. They were, you know, I don't know. It just sort of gelled and worked. And I love those scenes. And they've had a couple of them this season so far that just really work. And I loved it. This was a great episode. It was a great cap to a two-parter. This is probably going to be up there for me as one of the better two-parters in Star Trek. And there's been some good ones.
Who is your favorite mirror universe discovery officer?
Other than Killy, because Killy's always a joy. I love Captain Killy.
Yeah, I think everyone does.
I think it's bizarre that they call her Killy sometimes. That sort of feels like a nickname that they'd call her on the side, like behind her back.
Yeah, but don't forget, Georgiou, as she said before, even in her timeline, she is, I can't remember what she said now, but like sort of particularly, I think she said particularly wicked or something. Mm-hmm. So I get that they would call her Killy. They're celebrating her, you know, Killiness. So for you it's Killy.
It's always Killy. I think she's just a tremendous, she's a better character in the Mirror Universe than she is in the Prime Universe, I guess.
From what we remember of her, yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to throw it out there and say actually mine is Lieutenant Reese.
Really?
He gets so little opportunity to
do anything. I mean,
and there will be a time when that's not true. He's clearly going to have an episode soon because, and I will talk about this more, I guess, in the next episode, but we are moving into episodic Star Trek soon. So, given the lack of dialogue, Patrick Watchoon, who plays Reese, he gets a lot of eyebrow acting. And his ability as both Prime and Mirror tactical officer is... I think this was the thing. I'm like acutely aware of him whenever he's on screen because he's so very good at conveying stuff. And obviously he's part of the team that want to take Georgiou down in the Mirror Universe in this episode. Mm-hmm. And I just think there's so many little bits of side eye and sort of, you know, little bits of passive aggression that are, yeah. I mean, sometimes they're almost like semi out of focus in the background, and he does it so beautifully. I have to say, I'm really looking forward to his kind of character focus episode because I'm absolutely loving him at the moment.
So what would you give Terra Firma Part 2?
It would be getting a maybe even 4¾ out of me, but it's actually going to get a 4¼, and the reason being that problem with it, it's a good device, it's the best device you had, but it's a clumsy device with Carl. But for that, it would be getting a lot higher. So four and a quarter, but a joyous one.
The nostalgia worked for me, Ben. When they did the reveal, I literally shouted, "Oh shit!" In the middle of the night in my living room with nobody else around.
I see that for you.
As loud as possible. I was caught off guard. I was not expecting that. Really was thinking it was going to be a Q or something. I expected him to turn into John DeLancey or something at the last moment.
I never bought the Q thing.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but I was just sort of... I don't know, something about it just felt Q-ish to me, but... was not expecting the Guardian of Forever. That was a big... that worked for me.
Did you enjoy the sample of the original actor's voice for that?
Yes! Also, I did.
That was cute.
I thoroughly enjoyed that. My oldest daughter, who is a very retro kid, as we've discussed on numerous other podcasts, I showed her that, and she was also very excited by that because she has watched more of the original series than she has of probably any other Star Trek, which...
I would expect that because she is awesome.
And for me, Ben, it I'm happy to give it that 4¾ that you weren't going to, that you wanted to give it but didn't. So I'm happy to give it 4¾. So let's talk about Star Trek Discovery Season 3, Episode 11, Sukal. Sukal? I think that's right. Sukal. One of those things. The day before Christmas.
I couldn't be bothered.
Discovery. So this episode literally picks up right at the end of the last episode. They're still in the conference room or whatever when they learn that Discovery has detected a life sign on the starship in the highly radioactive Varubin Nebula, and Saru suggests that it could be the child of one of the starship's scientists. They jump there to investigate and find a planet made primarily of dilithium inside of the nebula. Saru, Burnham, and Culber transport to the planet, leaving Tilly in command of Discovery. on the planet, the away team find themselves inside a complex holographic simulation designed by the scientists to raise and protect the child. We've seen episodes of Star Trek that are similar to this before. They find the child, Sukal, and discover that he was born with biology adapted to the planet and the radioactive nebula, while the away team suffers from radiation poisoning, so that's no good. Sukal is not prepared to deal with the reality outside of the simulation, and when he becomes upset, he creates an energy surge similar to the burn. An emerald... an emerald chain ship commanded by Osira arrives. Book flies into the nebula to get the away team. He gets Burnham, but the others, plus the stowaway Adira, stay with Sukal. Osira captures Discovery and forces it to jump to Starfleet Command. Ben, what did you think of Sukal?
I was not in love with this episode.
No, me neither.
I didn't hate this episode, but here are the missteps in my mind. The reimagining for the purposes of not freaking out the Kelpian kid thing of making people different species, I didn't really feel that was necessary because there was no reason why it was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
We've covered before how much we are massively in thrall of Doug Jones.
Yep.
I thought actually he was weak without the Saru mass. I mean,
it's a little weird.
Given that everyone else's consciousness was very much still intact, and then he did the kind of, he almost fell into the Star Trek thing of, is this the human emotion? It was all a bit, ugh. My heels are touching the ground. What is going on? just show up, mate. So I wasn't keen on that. Whereas I thought actually the Burnham reaction was far more logical. Mm-hmm. The idea that, you know, Kelpian orphan kid, even if you accept the premise of living in a sort of Plato's cave holodeck thing, mm-hmm. Is legit. I felt like him having a tantrum or being freaked out causing the burn doesn't really make sense, and I'm not even that here for the explanation for that, because I don't see that there is a logical explanation. They've mm-hmm. given some explanation in this episode, but the highlight of this episode, to go on the positive side, was for me the interaction between Osira and Tilly. I nearly said Killy because she was channeling her inner Killy.
Yes, she was.
And I did enjoy that. And I, you know, again,
she stepped up to the plate. Yeah.
Yeah, and we know that there's a journey the writers have to cover, as we've covered before, to get Tilly to where she needs to be. And this was a big step, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it, and clearly so did her bridge crew. I like that. There's obviously chain of command issues, though, because ain't no one listening to shit she says on that bridge.
No.
Quite irritatingly at times, I thought. Starfleet, if nothing else, is about the chain of command, and wasn't so visible.
Well, she's
here.
The acting first officer, but she's retained her rank of ensign.
There's so much wrong with that.
And so weird.
Great. Yeah. So hard, doesn't it? There's still jarring issues with this. I assume we're going to get a field promotion at some point to at least lieutenant, hopefully.
Yeah.
Because just in everyone's mind, that'll make it slightly easier to swallow. Mm-hmm. The Kelpians, I worry we're mining to death a little bit, and I feel like there's ultimately going to be a reason why, but we're not getting it yet.
Yeah.
There's so many things. Things I loved, again, to go back to that side of it, the conversation between Tilly and Burnham about the burr, yes, an actual word, underneath the left arm of the captain's chair. I enjoyed that conversation because it felt kind of authentic and so on. But then moments later, utterly jarred by the fact that when Paul Stamets gets seized by the, I don't know, Emerald Chain stormtroopers, whatever, And
yeah,
all that's happening on the bridge is Tilly saying, Stamets come in, cue like 10 minutes of action. Ensign Stamets report, or Commander Stamets report, again, cue 10 minutes of action, followed by Paul, what's going on? I mean, by that point, seriously, girl, there's something going on. You all need to get people down there right now and find out what's going on before like 20 minutes have passed and all of a sudden your bridge is being invaded. Going right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, of course, it was an edit and it wasn't real time. Yes, of course, don't at me. But there were a few weird, jarring bits in this episode, and it was odd because, like, the people who've like bitched about Discovery from day one have been bitching about the fact that, oh, we need episodic Star Trek and blah, blah, blah. And this is all of those things. This is very much going back to episodic Star Trek and kind of enjoying that. But it's gone back to it at the expense of the season arc. And I know I'm sounding really contradictory here because I've been complaining about long season arcs, but there's just something not right about... Mm-hmm. About the way this... I really can't put my finger on it entirely. Yeah. And that makes me cross because actually they've been good at the detail so far. The one thing I've heard people complain about, I say people who I've watched this episode with, is the dialogue about the Kelpian Elder.
Yeah.
And how that doesn't make sense. And I haven't gone back and double-checked. But I think the point that Saru is making is that he's familiar with the concept of elders from before he knew the secret about Kelpians.
Yes.
But, you know, they were nothing else compared to this being the oldest Kelpian he's ever met.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel there was a problem with that, but people were picking up on apparently some inconsistent dialogue previously about it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Whatever.
That didn't hit for me.
Yeah. But
yeah.
There's just bits that I wasn't in love with about this. I again, though, and sort of following on from the last couple of episodes, parts of it were, you know, devices to get us from point A to point B. If we discover that the burn is nothing more than a nightmare of a scared Kelpian child running, yeah, you know, sitting in a holodeck, I'm going to be disappointed because the setup of let's increase the value of dilithium.
Yeah.
Versus the explanation for how that was done feels like a really uncomfortable shortcut. Mm-hmm. The only other thing is Osira was just lovely, enjoyed her a bit, mm-hmm, a bit, you know, a little bit cliche villain, but mm-hmm, why not? It was fun. The fact that by the time we hit this point in the future, ain't no one a fan of transwarps, which is odd. Also, we've discovered, by the way, that because physics is weird like that, that if you put weird, like Jason the Wheel Warriors type tentacles around Discovery and attach it to a ship, you know, five times the size of it, mm-hmm, apparently that can do spore drivey stuff too.
Yeah, it's just, you know, osmosis, I think. Is right? It some sort of technological osmosis?
And it turns out you don't have to say black alert, you can just say get us out of here.
Yeah.
Which doesn't beat Manifest, does it?
No, it does not beat Manifest. Right. No. I didn't care for this episode either. Now, we've got two episodes left, Ben, and the way this episode ended had me thinking the next three episodes, or like the next two episodes, are all connected because it's leading to the finale. And that makes me hesitant to say this. But given how glued I was to my seat for this whole season of Discovery, and then we lead up to this moment, mm-hmm, I don't feel like I'm entirely giving a hot take here by saying I think we may have gotten a Moffat here, Ben. Maybe not a double Moffat, but I think a Moffat nonetheless. If you recall the silence and how paid off.
Actually, I don't recall the silence. Hang on. There's one of them. I remember them now.
Yes.
No, I turn back. I don't know who you're talking about.
They started off very cool and ended less so.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that I was as intrigued by the burn as I was by the silence when I first saw them in Doctor Who, but I was here for the story, like, and the way they weren't, like, hinging every episode on it was nice, and everything else was kind of coming together real smoothly. And we knew there was a possibility what was going on with Georgiou had nothing to do with the burn, and it didn't. That being said, I mean, I don't know, like, I don't know what I would have done differently, but I don't think I would have.
Is it not have the biggest incident that occurred in the entire history of the intergalactic space travel universe be caused by a nightmare of a Kelpian living on a holodeck?
Yes, that would have not been what I would have gone with.
Right, okay, good, because I'm with you.
I'm not even sure if they explained it adequately why he has the ability to do this.
Well, hang on, I think your friend Colbert did. He said, and I almost quote, he grew up on a ship surrounded by radiation and a planet made of dilithium. Therefore, insert square bracket,
yeah,
he developed the power to have entire, literally universe destructive powers related to an element that's nearby him when he was at holographic school.
This really doesn't feel like it works. No. That feels like a big disappointment to me. Hopefully it's a red herring, but it doesn't seem like it is.
I hope so, because the device of the burn is inspired. But it needed... I don't even care really what the explanation is, as long as it isn't shit.
Yeah.
And the problem is, this explanation is shit.
Mm-hmm. It kind of reminds me of Charlie X in the original series of Star Trek. Just that kid who just has temper tantrums over everything.
That was bugging me so hard. I'm so glad you said that, because I couldn't remember what it was. Yes, exactly that. Exactly that.
We have Kelpian X here. We got, like, Sukal X. And he's just like, I'm so sick of dilithium. And, like, that's it. That's what happens. He just got really pissed. I hate living in this radiation field. I hate this dilithium planet. I hate dilithium.
Blue is like the worst color. Yeah.
I've
got a Beautiful South album he'll hate.
I just...
It's a weird dive, I'm so sorry.
Yes, it is, but look, we need all the distractions we can get. I just do not know about this direction at all. Like, I don't know, I don't like it. I don't know, it just doesn't seem suitable to me. Like, that's something you do in, like, an episode with a beginning, a middle, and an end. Yeah. And not this big, like, big arching, like, sub story with these huge ramifications. Like, satisfactory.
It feels like it set us back a bit as well, because the end of this episode is the Osira Empire destroyer class ship wrapping its Jason the World Warriors tentacles around Discovery and disappearing, and Book and Burnham going, oh shit, it's gone, and, well, mind you, they're not short of dilithium, to be fair. So the problem is, like, we started this show by saying, oh well, at least they're not doing the whole kind of, oh well, maybe Book and Burnham will spend the whole time trying to chase down Discovery and blah, blah, blah. And of course we've had the stuff from the Admiral as well saying, hey, don't lose that ship. Watch it. And now what we've got is, you know, we're nearly at the end of the season and we've got, oh shit, we lost Discovery and we found a load of dilithium and inadvertently told everyone where it is. It just feels like, I don't know. I mean, obviously, we don't know where Discovery disapparated to.
No.
I borrowed from Rowling, which is not something I'm comfortable doing these days. But
you borrowed from Chris
Jill Collins, Murphy. Or, yeah. I was going to say from Jill Murphy, who J.K. Rowling stole it from. But yeah, I mean, whatever. The situation is that we're now with, as you say, a couple of episodes left, we're now in a situation where we're at the place that we were glad we weren't six episodes ago. And don't get me wrong, I think we probably will not now spend forever trying to find Discovery or whatever else. I think we will end up with some sort of conclusion to the big bad arc by the end of this. But
yeah,
I got to the end of this not thinking, oh my God, like I did at the end of Terra Firma Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
I got to the end of this thinking, oh God, now we've got to sort that out.
Yeah.
And that's not the way I want to feel when I watch a multi-parter of Star Trek.
So yeah.
I'm really pleased that we've gone back to episodic, because like we've been extolling the virtues of episodic Star Trek for ages, mm-hmm. as has the entire angry internet. But the problem we've got now is that we've created like one of the worst tropes of episodic Star Trek.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping for a real quick fix to this.
Mm-hmm.
Where preferably, as you say, the red herring here is, well, actually I'm hoping for a double red herring, not mm-hmm. even a double Moffat, which is, okay, tantrumy child is not the cause of the burn, because that'd be too weird and lazy, mm-hmm. and also Discovery ain't gone that far. I'm just hoping for both of those things.
Yes. I mean, I figure just Asira's taking them to Federation headquarters to blow them up because they're interfering.
I mean, that's what you do. You would go and fuck them up at this point, right?
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Yeah.
I mean, my hope is that there's the resolution to this in the next episode, and that the final episode will be a proper season finale unrelated to the events of the burn and anything exactly. else. So that's my hope. What did you give Sukal?
Upon three rewatches, I'm afraid I still can't score it any higher than a 3.
Okay. Well, that's good, because I gave it 2¾.
Which is what I was going to, and then I thought I should stop doing quarters.
Nope. I needed to, because I'm like, this isn't like 2½. But, I was so disappointed at the end of the day that I'm like, I can't even give it a 3. I can't even go with
good. I gave it the extra quarter because this episode, much like Terra Firma Part 2, actually, mm-hmm. was still crazy pretty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, the gorgeous
Man,
looking.
They're spending some money at that network, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. I mean, the show continues to look great, and the performances and stuff are good. It's just the story direction here just took a turn for the worse, as far as I'm concerned. And, to me, this barely peels above average. Which is a shame, because the whole rest of the season up until this point has been tremendous. Best season of the show by far.
Without a doubt.
So, but you never know. Things could turn around. Maybe they will, Ben. We'll find out. In the meantime, you can go to cinemageekly.com to check out the archives of the show. And of course, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. Just search for I'm a Doctor, Not a Podcast. Hit subscribe, and that way you can come back to listen to us talk about more Discovery. Season 3, Episode 12, the penultimate episode of Season 3, called There Is a Tide, directed by Jonathan Frakes.
And now time for a shameless plug. If you enjoyed this episode and the inane ramblings of the British guy, then why not join us for that's a show, I'm a Doctor, Not a Podcast, our other show about a Doctor, where we will talk about the new Doctor Who episode occurring on New Year's Day.
Who Made Who?
Right.
That's what it's called.
I'm glad you remember the name of the show that we did, because I had a moment.
It's been 2 years.